Wisconsin Public Radio turns 100 years old this year.
It's been a century since broadcast pioneer Professor Earl Terry and his students transmitted the first broadcast from Sterling Hall on the UW campus to a group of friends and colleagues gathered together at Terry's house.
As the story goes, the guests were pretty underwhelmed by the faint sounds of a classical piano tune coming through the receiver.
Few people at the time could foresee how wireless radio would revolutionize communication. Up to that point, Terry and his students had been transmitting messages via Morse code.
As part of an on-air celebration to honor our 100th anniversary, WPR listeners will periodically hear simple Morse code messages during episodes of old-time radio drama that starts this Sunday night, and they'll be challenged to decode them. Here is a sample.
No idea what that means, but maybe we'll find out. Well, two WPR colleagues are here with me in studio, Norman Gilliland and Dave Potrazer, the brains behind this idea. Norman Gilliland is a host and producer of old-time radio drama and The Midday, and he's also a reader for Chapter a Day. Norman, welcome.
Thank you, Veronica.
And Dave Potraz is a WPR network operator and announcer, and from time to time he's here helping out, being a technical director on Central Time as well. And Dave, good to have you on this side of the board.
Thank you very much, Veronica. Nice to be on this side.
Well, WPR is 100 years old this year. Hard to believe, but in the early days, radio was, you know, a lot different than it is today. Could you paint a picture for us about those early days of radio?
Well, it's kind of hard to imagine, you know, today with the ubiquitous nature of broadcast, you know, television, radio, and the internet now and all that. But back in those days, there was just about nothing going on. There was nothing much to listen to, and not many people were able to listen to it. It wasn't until early experimentation with wireless in around the turn of the last century, in the early 1900s, that anyone at all was able to hear anything over the airwaves, and that was pretty much limited to telegraphic information. It all started with transmitters that were just capable of what they call a spark transmission, just on or off. So really, sound was out of the question at that point, and it wasn't until later that the evolution allowed for voice communication much later. So the same thing with WHA, or the former 9XM experimental station, back in the 19-teens, 1917, and we're celebrating that as well, that folks like Edward Bennett and Earl Terry at the university began experimenting with this new technology. And, of course, they used the already well-established Morse code to transmit messages over the air.
And this, of course, eventually led to the golden age of radio, which I'm sad to say I don't think we're in anymore. I guess we're past that. I'd like to think there's still a golden age happening on Wisconsin Public Radio. But, Norman, tell us about that golden age. What was that like?
Well, you know, I take issue a little bit with the term, although I use it a lot, too, in the sense of radio from 1932 to 1962, when you had millions of listeners and when a show like We Hold These Truths in 1941 could have more than half the population of the country listening to it. I mean, how often does that happen today? I venture to say not at all. So, yes, those were wonderful years, 32 to 62 in particular. You had radio drama being produced and getting more and more elaborate, and big-name stars, and these huge audiences that listened every week to their favorite shows. But, you know, I would argue also that before that, there was a golden age when the power of radio was just being discovered, and Marconi and his invention could actually, if you read a book by Eric Larson, Thunderstruck, gives you a good idea. I read that for Chapter a Day, and it's a fascinating book about how a wife killer was actually tracked during his escape across the Atlantic to Quebec by wireless. And as soon as he stepped off the boat, they nabbed him. So that was a golden age, too, and we're arguably in a golden age now, too. The medium of dissemination varies, but there's so much programming, so much diversity, and so many opportunities still that this is a golden age, too, I say.
I like that read on it, Norman. And for your program, Old Time Radio Drama, do you draw most of what you play? I mean, you produce some new things, too. You're keeping the art alive. But the stuff that you draw from the archives, where does that tend to come from?
It comes from all over the place. There's one collector in particular who is a well, an incredible collector, by which I mean by the U-Haul load. But he's also very discriminating in terms of the audio quality. And for many years, he has totally out of the goodness of his heart and for the sake of the medium and the art provided these things, a lot of them, a lot of the best audio for me for old-time radio.
Do they come from that 30s to 60s window?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say 99.8% from between 1932 and 1962.
And I guess what made this technology that we're talking about possible, something called crystal radio, not something I knew very much about at all, but tell us about crystal radio, what that is.
Yes, indeed. The crystal radio, it's really the most basic form of radio, and it's really fascinating and I guess egalitarian in a way. Anyone, virtually anyone, can construct a crystal radio, or could back in the day, and that was basically the only form of radio that was available. Tube receivers didn't come until much later, but it could be constructed with just a few inexpensive parts, a wire for an antenna, a copper coil of wire to receive the radio waves, and something called a crystal detector. That was kind of the heart of the radio, and that consisted back in the day in the earliest form of what was called colloquially a cat's whisker, and all it was a wire that you placed against a rock. A piece of galena crystal was used, and if you placed it properly, you would detect the signal. And what that essentially was changing the form of the incoming radio wave to a form that could be heard over a simple pair of earphones. You didn't have loudspeakers like we do today and amplifiers and things like that. So it's just a very simple form. But it was the groundswell of basically grassroots hobbyists, enthusiasts, students, farmers, were involved in this as well to construct these sets. And I think what came after that was the gee whiz factor. You know, once you heard one, listen to this, and then you probably wanted to build your own, you know, back in the day. And it was that groundswell, I think, that kind of fed back and forth. There was a feedback loop between what was being transmitted back in the early days of 9XM, as we know. It was basically the weather report, and crop prices were the first broadcast that we had. But essentially, a public service way back then. So I think what we were seeing was the dawn of public radio.
I see where you're going.
Yes.
Yeah, and radios were expensive too, right? So this isn't the kind of thing that you could just pick up.
They could be. Some, like a crystal set, you could build very inexpensively. But on the other hand, if you wanted to get more elaborate, you could certainly do that. And I have a diagram from 1923 that still confounds me of how to build your own radio. It's good luck, my friend.
So it's much cheaper to build it yourself than to buy it from a store. So, Dave, you're getting at crystal radio's birth in the beginnings of public radio, where we are today. So, Norman, how did crystal radio play into public radio?
Well, it put radio in the hand of anybody who wanted to express, you know, an interest and get involved in it. And that's, you know, the groundwork for anything, whether it's the internet or radio or the automobile, even to some extent. If you make it a consumer item, suddenly its popularity ramps up. And that's what happened to radio. And then, kind of as Dave was implying, there's a loop there. The more people had radio, the more purpose there was of putting programming on it, and the better the programming got, the more people listened, and on it went, and it really took off in the 20s.
And does it have a connection, do you think, to the Wisconsin idea, public radio, and, you know, the roots, maybe even to what you hear today on Wisconsin public radio?
Oh, thank you for a loaded question.
What do you mean?
Well, you know, University of Wisconsin Extension. Wisconsin Public Radio is part of the UW Extension, and the extension idea is that farmers in particular would listen to the programming and get information that was important to their work. And so it's an outgrowth of that, except now it's not just farmers, nor was it even early on. It expanded very quickly to other interests.
We're talking right now with Dave Potrez, a WPR network operator and announcer, and Norman Gilliland, host and producer of old-time radio drama in the midday. And we're talking about some of the roots of radio, and also, this is all to mark the 100th birthday of Wisconsin Public Radio. Listeners can participate in decoding Morse code messages that will be played during the old-time radio drama program. And let's get to that. You guys brought in some fancy-looking stuff here, and you're going to demonstrate. What have you got with you?
I've put together what was called a code oscillator, and I have a key, and this key is actually 129, 130 years old. And
wow.
I refurbished that and put together a speaker in this case so we could hear it in a tone form. So it's a combination of the old and the new, but the purpose is to be able to generate our own code for Norman's use during old-time radio.
That is so cool. And the speaker would be the thing by the microphone. It's, mm-hmm. it's in a glass bell, and it looks like a little disc, a little hockey puck with a hole in it, basically. And that's it, huh?
Well, yeah, that's just the speaker. I kind of wanted to, kind of like borrowing from a Back to the Future line by Dr. Brown, if you're going to make a time machine, you might as well do it with a little style. So we put it together and, you know, might have some flashing lights coming later. And I also want to use that to be able to construct crystal radios in the next couple of months or so, and to be able to use that as kind of a makeshift amplifier for that as well.
Well, can you play it for us? Let's hear some.
Yeah, let's try some.
Okay, was that gibberish, Norman, or did you just say something?
I said what we said at the beginning of this show, Veronica.
Oh, well, you're going to tell us?
W-H-A.
Can I hear it one more time, knowing that? I think it will be imbued with meaning. W-H-A. Very
W-H-A.
Cool.
W-H-A. Yeah, I mean, you know, pardon my pronunciation a little bit. But, yeah, W-H-A.
So tell us, if you will, about this contest that's going to happen on old-time radio drama using Morse code.
Well, in a nutshell, let's see. The Sunday night, 29th, 8:30, give or take a couple of minutes after the Lone Ranger, we'll send out a short coded message, I can tell you. In fact, it's going to be a single word. We'll invite people to decode that, send their decodings to us via email, and then we'll draw within a week a prize winner from among all of those correct decoders. And we'll be doing this throughout the year as the message develops over the course of the 12 months through December of 2017.
Nice. What's the prize, Norman?
Oh, it's a different prize every month.
Oh, different prizes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool things. And Dave, since you put this together, tell us as we wrap up a little bit about how it works.
Well, the key here, as I say, is a vintage 120 so years old, and basically the oscillator generates a continuous tone that is broken by the key. So when you press the key, you close the circuit and create the tone.
So does anybody still really use Morse code today?
We do.
You guys, yeah. Does anybody else use it? Wasn't there an option on a phone? You can get some phones that have it?
Well, yeah, sometimes, like, you know, certain kind of people with certain disabilities, limited mobility can use Morse code. There have been cases of POWs who, you know, have been interviewed on television and flash out torture in Morse code. True, you know. So, yeah, and sometimes it's easier to transmit great distances than speech.
I've also heard that survivalists learn Morse code in case you're trapped on a desert island or something like that.
That's
want
right.
to flash a signal
so
to an
interesting. Overlord. So interesting.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, guys. Thanks for coming by.
Our pleasure.
There's a couple of WPR staffers, Norman Gilliland from Old Time Radio Drama, Dave Protraz, one of our network operators and announcers. And starting this Sunday night, listeners can participate in a decoding Morse code kind of contest on Old Time Radio Drama. You're listening to Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll be right back.